email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
The Dictionary of Hiberno English. That's the book, and smithereens is in there. And above it is a smidgen. That's a lovely word, a small amount. I'll have just a smidgen of sugar in my tea. Thanks, Tommy Tiernan. How are you, Tommy?
Now, I'm going to tell you a bizarre coincidence that you won't believe.
Go on.
I'm sitting in my shed with that book in my hand.
You are not.
I swear to God, Ray. And I had no idea what you were talking about.
Right.
Right? I swear to God, I have the book here in my hand.
Right. I'm just going to check you now.
Terence Patrick Dolan, the third edition, Hiberno English.
Yes, go to page 133 then.
130, and I'll tell you two words that aren't in it that I was very upset about.
Go on.
Wagon.
Ah, yes.
One of the great Irish words of the 80s. That wagon. And another one, I don't know. Do you ever use the phrase sand rabbit?
No.
To describe someone?
No.
I'm sure some of you listeners are. It's a kind of a gormless fool of an easily led young fella.
Right.
Bit of a sand rabbit. Page 133. Hunger and ease, hurry, hurrish, hurling.
There
hurley,
you go. Yes, you have it. You're not joking. You're not joking.
Yeah, isn't that phenomenal now?
Look, Keith Barry has nothing on it.
That's one of the most. That'll keep me going out till next Monday. The coincidence of that.
So you're in a shed.
I'm always in a shed, Ray. I'm always in a shed.
No, it because that's a coincidence as well, because we started talking about sheds this week and people have been sending us in pictures of sheds.
This is getting spooky now. This is
we're connected in some strange way.
Yeah. So let's start a campaign to reintroduce the word wagon into Irish political discourse.
Now, wagon can refer to both a man and a woman.
I don't think so.
All right. Right, okay.
I think specifically
a woman
aimed at the ladies in the world. And when women would use it, I've heard Mayo women talk about other Mayo women going, she's an awful wagon.
Wagon, yeah.
It's a beautiful word. It just has, and I don't know how an actual wagon, that you see in the Wild West and stuff like that.
Is related to it, yes.
Is related to the insult.
Yes.
I can see the connection between sand rabbit and food, but I can't see the wagon connection. I'm failing to see it.
But,
you'd
be a man who'd be fascinated by words.
Oh, yeah, I love words. Yeah. I use a lot of them. I'm using them now. Do you not like them, Ray?
No, I love them.
Do you prefer
pointing?
I can see you at home of an evening, tired from talk, and just pointing at tea bags or sleeping bags.
Well, you know, that's scientifically proven, Tommy Tiernan, that men have less words than women. And if I have a particularly talkative 1.5 hour show, I might have run out of words.
Totally. I think men use 7,000 words a day and women are up around 20,000.
Yeah. Never the twain shall meet. Yeah. That's a mismatch there. You got a mismatch.
What I try and do is I try and use 7,000 different words. Never use the same word twice.
Bog trotter. Did you use that up in Navan?
Bog trotter.
Yeah.
No, what's that now?
It's a person with awkward manners. No, we used to use that around Kildare an awful lot, a bog trotter.
Bog trotter.
The lads who came in from Nurney now, they'd be bog trotters.
Oh, I heard a great, I talked to a fella from Spiddle recently, and he says to me, I said, one of the great things about the West of Ireland is that people tolerate eccentricity. You know, and what's a great thing about a lot of Irish communities is you can be eccentric and it's okay. There's no need to call for an ambulance and send you to the psychiatric hospital. There's just any community or parish that can accommodate strangeness, I think, is good. And your man was telling me, he said, Spiddle is like that. He said, say you were of a habit now of coming into a bar of a Tuesday evening and you just loved sucking the inside of your pockets. He said people would pass no remark on you. They'd just leave you alone there in the corner sucking the inside of your pocket. But say you come in of a Tuesday and like to suck the inside of your pocket and also talk about politics. Well, they wouldn't like that. So I'm in favour of eccentricity. Yeah, so...
From where you're talking to us now, you're doing a podcast with Hector O'Hookagon and Loretta Blewett.
Yes.
Like when it came to the names, you sort of, Tommy Tiernan is fairly straightforward.
Compared to those two mouthfuls. Loretta is, she's originally a Blouet from France. And I think they come in with the Humbers down around Killala. And Hector O'Hookagon, of course, that's not his real name. He took that when he turned to Islam. His real name is John Foley, but he converted in... He was in St. Patrick's Institution for Young Offenders, and he was radicalised, and he took the name Hector O'Hookagon. It means ray of light in Islamic. He's always that.
And he's one of the few people who you can refer to by just one name, isn't he? Hector.
Hector, yeah. I think Ray. There's not too many Rays.
No. Well, Tommy, you see, you'd have to...
There's a few times. Tommy Bow.
Yeah.
There's Tommy Rennicks who delivers coal and Kells.
Right.
But yourself and Ray Lynham, I think, are the only two Rays that come to my mind.
Ray Lynham. Oh,
remember Ray? Right.
Yeah, I do remember Ray Lynham. Yeah. So the podcast, it's a weekly thing, yourself, Larissa and Hector, and you're on number two, I think. I listened to one and a half. Is that okay?
So I've listened to one.
I'm busy.
Did you get tired?
No, I just had to have my lunch and come into work.
I wanted to do something that was fun for me, you know, and that made me laugh. And Hector's been making me laugh since I was 11.
Right.
And we'd done some work with Larissa on iRadio. And I just thought, let the only barometer of this be fun.
Mm.
And who would I like to talk to? That's handy. And both of them were handy. So we meet once a week and we would talk for about 2 or 3 hours. Then we edit down to about 45, 50 minutes. And it's good crack.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's all it is.
And it's there wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
And there's a book, Winging It, with transcripts of interviews from the TV show.
You didn't make it now, Ray. I know you were on the chat show, but I think...
Do you know what?
I think both of us could admit it wasn't our finest hour.
I didn't even think I'd forgotten I was on it. That's the truth. That is the honest to God truth.
I'll never forget it.
I was a late call-up. I was a late call-up, Tommy.
You're hard work, Ray. You're hard work. There's nothing in you.
I spoke to you for a half an hour and cut it down to 10 minutes.
You're a sand rabbit.
Sand rabbit. So that's out now, is it?
Don't know when that's out. I'm down the shed, Ray. Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's out fairly soon. But it's a good read. And I don't know if... you'd be... interviewing people 5 days a week on the radio and then once a week. So you do 6 days of interviews.
Yes.
A week, you know, 45 weeks of the year or something like that.
No, go on. Anyway.
Or around that, you know, you do 35, 40. Yeah. You know, so it's a lot of talking and a lot of interviews. And I don't know if you've ever read back on any of them, but it's a real surprise to be as transfixed by what you've said in written form as it was when you heard it.
Right.
And there's something about reading the interviews. I actually think it's a gentler way of being with people. You know, there's a lot of kind of hullabaloo around and a lot of tension around television and radio. And it's very in the moment and it's kind of pressurized. But when some of the interviews that we did were just phenomenal. And to read them, to read, say, Adam Clayton and Paul McGrath, Bob Geldof, they couldn't have been written any better. And whatever it is about the particular intensity of an improvised chat show, it just brings out stuff in people that maybe they... Because say someone's going on your show or The Late Late, they can kind of say, I don't want to talk about this, I don't want to talk about that.
And, as they do.
You know, yeah, and I want to shape it this way and shape it that way. And you have to have a map, almost agreed with them beforehand, of where the interview is going to go.
Not everybody, but a lot of people,
So generally speaking, but that would be kind of a traditional way of doing it. And I remember when Bob Geldof started talking about the grief that he has experienced in his life. And I'm sure he's done it with you on the radio as well. He said, I suppose I can't come on a show like this and not go with whatever comes up. So I guess that's the nature of the TV show.
There's a sort of an unwritten contract.
Yeah, whatever arises, you go with it. And you also know, like we've had people talk about stuff that we couldn't include. So we have the luxury of being... of being a record, pre-record. So if somebody says something that they don't want to have included, we can say we won't include that in the edit. So that's the nature of it.
In doing this over the years, do you think people give more or less because there are 200 people looking at them?
I think that people give more, and I think that there is that kind of unwritten contract between me and them that they have to be open to whatever happens. And people do say remarkable things, and people are, there's been one or two people now who've been quite guarded, and you work with that, but generally speaking, people have divulged the most amazing stuff. And
and how is it going to work with no audience? And I'm asking this question genuinely because I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer either to that.
Okay.
I would be concerned. I don't know if the fact there's an audience in the television studio, what level of energy that brings to the encounter. If I was just talking to somebody in a television studio with nobody there, would it be as interesting? I don't know. I mean, we don't start recording, I think, until November, December. So maybe
things will have changed.
Maybe I can't imagine they've changed that much. But, you know, and I am not coping well with this lockdown thing at all.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Hasn't been good for you, hasn't it?
Not at all. No, the first couple of months were fantastic. I dined for the break. The next month after that, then, we'll say May going into June, I think that every family in the country found it tough because we were kind of 10 weeks into living with each other and nobody else. Mm. And we were missing the stimulation of other families and strangers. But we got through that and we navigated that. And then there was excitement because the whole thing is coming to an end and bars are going to open and we'll be able to go to matches. And sure, the Premier League is going to finish up. And then that kind of, that's been, I wouldn't say soured, but the crack has been taken out of that with this. It seems kind of endless, you know. And you're right, I was listening to you there and you're talking about the kind of fatigue in terms of instructions from the government. What I think is happening is that people are just starting to rely on common sense. And if they hear the numbers are up in their area, then they kind of behave accordingly. But that's my sense of it in Galway, Ray.
Right,
maybe Galway's different, and I'm out the western side of Galway City in a small parish.
Yeah.
So maybe things are different here than they are,
Maybe you're right.
But
you know that cliche about common sense?
No.
It's not that common.
Well,
you know, that's the thing. But anyway, my sense of it is there are messages, but they're mixed messages, and we need to have clear cut messages. We need to be told what to do, and I don't think we've been told what to do, and people are going their own way.
If you're not getting clear messages, and then what you do is you resort to instinct and common sense. And my sense of that around the parish where I live is that it's happening. You know, that people aren't shying away from one another, but at the same time, people aren't, we're not going around hugging one another either. And there's a kind of, you know, there's a low key wisdom at play. And it's really has absolutely nothing with the ads we hear. I hate that ad. Jeez, they played it in the break there.
Yes.
It's so, they're talking to us like we're 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
COVID has had a lot of, and the real slow, sincere, Jesus, I feel like throwing the radio out the window. You know, they talk to us like we're adults, will you?
Yeah.
So my sense of it is that we're kind of, common sense.
Common sense, okay.
Common sense.
So you said May, June there.
Yeah.
So how bad did it get, or what effect did it have on you?
After drama, I'll tell you how bad it got. That's what you're after. That's a fishy little question, isn't it? Say something awful. Were you walking under the nip all day drinking whiskey, shouting at the kids? How'd you know that? I was. I was the worst homeschool teacher ever. Daddy, put on some clothes. I think back then, I think we just started getting on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
You know, I even started playing Fortnite.
It's Roblox now, Tommy. You're so behind.
That's how bad it got. I was buying skins and
avatars and
totally. I was only dying to be groomed by some lad. So
I'm not going to get anything serious out of you.
Anyway, I think we started getting on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
And we spent about a month of realizing it's just the five of us in the house. How do we kind of, you know, the thing of eating lunch together and eating dinner together and daddy making dinner. The kids got sick of that one fairly quick. I don't know what happened. I think the lifting of restrictions kind of eased that. Once the kids were able to meet their pals, you know.
That was a big thing.
That was a big thing. And that kind of took some of the tension out of the house. And
you did say in the podcast that at 51, this is paraphrasing what you said, but that you're a bit tired of the showbiz thing and all that, that you just want to meet people and have chats.
Not tired of the showbiz thing, but the energy to do gigs, that kind of confidence, it's not in my back pocket anymore.
Right.
Do you know? So, but that's a rhythm thing. That's a habitual thing. That just takes time to get back into the groove of everything. So this is a great retreat. You know, they used to call Christmas, I think Theo Dorgan, the
poet.
Cork poet, he called the 10 days between, I think, Christmas Eve and the 2nd of January. I think it's him. He called it the great indoors. And I think that's what we're experiencing now. It was a huge, big retreat back into ourselves, into our houses.
And what did you learn about yourself?
That I'm a bit of a sand rabbit. What did I learn about myself? That I need stimulation.
Yeah.
What did I learn about myself? I don't know that I'm...
You have a low boredom threshold.
I don't know. I think I learned about myself that being at home all the time doesn't suit me.
Yeah.
And that I need the stimulation of crowds. I need adrenaline in my body. I need the excitement of change. And if I don't get that, I turn into a dog that starts barking at himself and those closest to him. And that's that's the difficulty.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing. And that's, you know... So that's part of the struggle that everybody's having is that this thing doesn't suit us. You know, this way of life is doesn't suit us.
Yeah.
So I found it as hard as anybody else.
But out of it has come the podcast, I would imagine. Like, the podcast wouldn't have happened if the pandemic didn't happen.
No.
And like, they paid 100 million to your man in the States, didn't they?
Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably read that and said, ooh, I'll have a bit of that.
Bit of Joe's money. Yeah, but the like I said to you earlier on, the desire to do it wasn't, it was about fun.
Yeah.
And letting that be the barometer of it, you know. So rather than trying to think about what would be successful and how do we make money out of it, you start with crack and you say, okay, what would just be the most, like, what would I really enjoy doing? And then after that, you think, okay, well, you know, like, I've never done an ad before in my life. I'm 25 years doing stand-up, 25 years in the public eye, and I've never done an ad, you know, because I always thought it was kind of selling out.
Right.
But by Jesus, when I was told it's the only way to make money out of a podcast, well, I said, sign me up. So I wrote two ads, because that's the way you make money out of podcasts.
Yeah.
But as I said, the...
So that's those little jingles then.
Those
you wrote
little
those.
Jingles,
they're
yeah.
great.
That's how you make money out of podcasts.
Yeah.
But like I said, if it wasn't fun, it's not worth doing. And I hope people get a laugh out of it. And it's kind of unpredictable, uncensored, and it's fun.
The review is in. Can you congratulate Tommy on his new podcast? Absolutely love listening to the three of them having the crack and the giggles. James in Dublin 7.
Great, yeah, yeah.
Have you any Leaving Cert students? Or even one?
Yes, I have a Leaving Cert. I have a Leaving Cert girl who got what she wanted.
Oh, brilliant!
So she was very happy. You know, I remember it made me think about. I got my. Where were you when you got your Leaving Cert results?
Oh God! Well, I was outside the school because that's where you got them back then.
Oh, of course. And you probably stayed there for the whole summer, did you? Just in case they came in early.
Well, they actually came in late because, as I was telling them earlier on, there was a strike that year, so they didn't come out till September sometime.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
I was in a phone box in London.
Right.
And I phoned home and I knew things didn't go well when the first thing my father did was sigh. I have the results here, Tom. I got offered nothing. I got offered.
And what did you apply for?
I think I probably applied for nothing, but I got offered nothing.
Well, there, success.
Was that? I got what I wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got offered nothing. I ended up working in a carpet factory in Navan for a while, and then going down to Cork to sign on the dole.
And we'll take it up after the break, because I have to take a break. Now, stay there. Don't move. Right.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're speaking to Tommy Jernan from his shed in Galway, and he has a new podcast out with Hector Nihookagon. It's not Nihookagon. I've just made a woman out of him, haven't I? I did that before as well, the last time. There's something.
Hector Nihookagon.
There's something subconscious there. Apologise to him when you see him.
I will, of course.
And Loretta blew it. And it's available there wherever you get your podcasts. Mm. You're on number 3 now, is it? Or number 2?
We've just number 2 went out yesterday.
Great. And Winging It is the book. Transcriptions. I've lost it now. Transcriptions of interviews from the TV show.
Yeah.
Lachico. There's Lachico. One from. An unpleasant, disagreeable person. A Lachico.
Yeah, it's great. It's a fantastic book, you know. And I suppose one of the things about it is that sometimes we feel that unless we speak Irish, that we're missing out on a way of describing the world, and we're missing out on just a beautiful way of talking. But that book kind of just reestablishes the glory of the way that we speak English, which is lively and inventive. It's a great book.
So happy to hear Tommy Tiernan on the air with you. I've just moved back with my parents, back in with my parents due to coronavirus. After living in Dublin for 2 years, listen to RTE helps me maintain that connection to Ireland. I miss it so much. Tell Tommy, thanks for the last, that's Susan. I think Tommy's right about low-grade wisdom, but this only applies to areas with a prevailing community spirit. I think in larger areas that feel a bit more anonymous, it's harder to rely on common sense, and that's where clear guidelines are needed, says Kira.
That's a good point. Good point.
Oh my God, I would love to win a day in the life of Tommy Tiernan.
Jesus, you would not. This is me on this show. This is a peak experience for me. That's how desperate my life is. This is it. This is as good as my life gets.
I don't know how to react to that. Anyway, that's Lucy. Just a tonic as a comedian, always very interesting as a philosopher.
I remember one time I said to my father, I wanted to be a philosopher. And he said, Tom, we're all philosophers. So, yeah.
Do you read philosophy at all?
It'd be too academic for me now. I wouldn't understand it. I'd go on with you, stop. It's very academic. You get into philosophy now, it's all... But
there's popular philosophy, isn't there?
Like the pig that wants to be eaten and your man Zizek from Eastern
people like
Europe.
And Alain de Botton.
Oh, yeah, that lad. No, I don't like that kind of stuff. The type of philosophy that I have, I suppose, it's not really philosophy. It's just kind of Irish owlad talking. It's not really... Right. You wouldn't be in the Sorbonne or sitting next to Heidegger or, you know, doing a course on metaphysics with Richard Carney in Toronto. You know, it's just owlads chatting. That's all it is.
But you're like, you know, I study psychology and really just, it's just putting jargon on common sense.
And did you finish the course?
I did. But like, I didn't really learn much at all from it. You know,
where did you study it?
Trinity College.
Jesus Christ. And then you became a DJ.
So you were in a phone box in London and you ring home and your dad says...
He just sighed. He called out the letters that were beside the subject. I failed two subjects. I got a C in honours English, which I was delighted with. And I got a couple of D's then, and I failed two exams. I can't remember what they were. So I wouldn't have got a fantastic Leaving Cert at all. Hmm. But I didn't need it, you know. I sometimes wish that I had more confidence in myself when I was in school, you know. I wish that I had realised back then that I'd never need a Leaving Cert in what I was going to do.
But life doesn't work like that, Tommy.
What?
Life doesn't work like that.
So you're breaking up there. So I wouldn't be a great man to bring along to a parent-teacher meeting.
No.
Because I'd be kind of, I wouldn't be that inspired by... Now, if your child is academic, I would say no more than if your child is athletic, give them the greatest encouragement. And some kids thrive with books and information, and it's a kind of it's almost like they're online playing a game. You know, they love it. And these amazing children who got 9,000 points and, you know, they're able to do four or five courses in Trinity at the same time. They're that clever. And fair play to them. But there's a huge tranche of people as well who, the school is so uninspiring and you're just kind of getting through it. And I wish I had more confidence in myself back then. I wanted to leave school when I was 17. And before I did the Leaving Cert, and my father, he was exasperated because I'd failed all my exams in Navan and they'd forked out a lot of money to send me to boarding school in Ballinasloe. And I came back after the first year in Ballinasloe and I'd failed all the exams again. And he was just at his wit's end, you know, and he says, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to leave school, you know. And he said, okay. And I chickened out and I ended up going back for the Leaving, you know.
Listen, before I leave you with this, it's from a philosopher, a German philosopher, can't remember his name, through Eamon Dunphy. And it's that we only make sense of life when we look back on it.
There you go.
Unfortunately, we live life going forward.
There, unless you can moonwalk.
Tommy, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Ray. Mind yourself, you're a gentleman.
Go back to your book.
Thank you.
That's Tommy Tiernan there. Thanks, Tommy.